to the book of Jeremiah. There's two places I want us to read first. I could not get away from this this in my mind. I love the stories of the Bible, and I love how certain stories are larger than just themselves. They're more than just David and Goliath, where you have a moment. And I like those stories, but those stories are kind of caught in their own little moment. But then there are stories in the Bible that you really have to sit down and you have to research. And when I say that, you've got to walk out who their grandparents was. You've got to walk out who their kids were and grandkids were, and how big effect that one life or that one person's life had. Because God looks at it that way. So many times in our society, and what I want to speak on as you're turning to Jeremiah 15, verses 1 through 6, I want to preach on there are too many Manassehs. There are too many Manassehs. Manasseh was a king of Israel. He, by the end of his life, you would think, was a great guy, a godly man. But I want you to read with me as we are at this Jeremiah 15, and we'll read to verse 4. Then said the Lord unto me, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, yet my mind could not be toward the people. Cast them out of my sight and let them go forth. In other words, God says, even if Moses was standing in front of me right now, or Samuel, who were men that I listened to more than any other men that have ever walked on this earth, if they stood before me right now and pleaded the case, I would tell them, just get out of my way. And it shall come to pass, if they say unto thee, whither shall we go? Then thou shalt tell them, thus saith the Lord, such are for the death to death, and such are for the sword to the sword, and such are for famine to famine, and such are to the captivity to the captivity. And I will appoint over them four kinds, saith the Lord, the sword to slay, the dogs to tear, the fowls of the heaven, and the beasts of the earth to devour and destroy. And I will cause them to be removed into all kingdoms of the earth because of Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah, king of Judah, for that which he did in Jerusalem. Now you think about it. God has passed a judgment on an entire group of people. He has said, you know what? I am fixing to do what nobody could talk me out of doing. And it isn't because there's just some huge rebellion, there's just some huge uprising, there's some enormous calamity that this group or a whole society or a whole tribe has created. God narrows it down and says, one man has caused me to have to do this. One man has brought me to the point to where words will not change my mind. It will not affect me. Go with me to 2 Kings chapter 24. And to show you that God is not just simply saying this, beginning at verse 2, we hear the story. And the Lord sent against him bands of Chaldeans and bands of Syrians and bands of Moabites and bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it according to the word of the Lord which he spake by his servants the prophets. Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah, to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he did, and also for the innocent blood that he shed. For he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord could not pardon. Look at the person beside you and say, there are certain things God cannot pardon. See, I grew up in the age where testimonies were the most powerful things. We loved them. We would tell and send out flyers that we were bringing in this speaker who had a tremendous testimony, and we'd put them all over town. We'd say, come here, this guy's preaching a revival for us, and you ought to hear his testimony, and you ought to hear what his life and what he came through and what he came out of and all of this. And don't get me wrong, there is a place for that, but I used to sit there as a young person, and it used to really kind of bother me to the other end, because I felt like, well, I really don't have anything to tell people about. I don't really have anything to share about God. I just get up and live for Him every day. I just go about my business. I haven't done this, and I haven't been on drugs for years and years, and I haven't done this or that, and I haven't been passed out and locked up in jail, and I haven't done all those things, and I haven't done some things and had to go through enormous catastrophes or problems that God has brought in my life. I didn't have it. It was wonderful hearing those stories, and it was almost like heroic that you went through these problems, that you went through these trials, almost like you needed to go through it to actually know how to love God correctly. And it's the way it was presented. And you get to see a person and you would say to yourself, well, see, they turned out all right. See? Look at all they did, Mom. And look where they're at. They're preaching. I don't even get asked to get on the pulpit. They get asked to preach. They get asked to speak. I mean, their life has to be so much more close to God than mine. And it was only as I started watching in life, and I guess getting older, I see it now more than I used to. I grew up when Ozzy Osbourne, you would have not even mentioned that name in a church. We're talking about somebody who wrote some of the most horrific satanic music the world will ever hear. He was noted for biting birds' heads off on stages. That's what they would show of him. Now somehow he's a grandpa, just a general old guy, him and his wife, with good kids, just normal people. Somehow, Gene Simmons, all the years of all that he did and all the life that he lived, is just no big deal. It's amazing how when we get older and we see them and their days of catastrophe are over and their days of destruction are over, and now all there is just, you know, they're just getting their life finally right. Somehow we think that's the coolest way and the greatest way to live. And we don't want to mention those that didn't quite come out of it. We don't want to mention the Whitney Houstons who, when she started singing, she was found in a church. That's where she learned to sing, in a choir. Somebody found her and made her a superstar. And if she had lived long enough, sooner or later, she would have gotten old and she would have gotten her life back together and she'd have probably put a gospel album out when she was 60. She didn't get the opportunity because life swallowed her up. Manasseh is an incredible story. It's one of the most powerful stories that you'll ever read. And if you have the time, I hope that you spend it. But I want to share with you a little bit about Manasseh, a little bit about his life, and I want to show you as it compares to our world today. And how it's so distorted, and how we build up things that need not be built up, and how we brag about things that we ought not even want to talk about. Manasseh was born into one of the best houses you possibly could be born into. He was the son of the king Hezekiah. Hezekiah had such a relationship with God that even when Hezekiah was going to die, he was able to put his face to a wall and pray to God and say, God, give me some years. And God would turn the prophet around in the middle of a corridor and say, go back and tell Hezekiah, I have heard his words and I'm going to give him more years. You read some of the Psalms that are written by King Hezekiah. You will, in this Bible, read writings from him and different things from him. Some of the songs, some of the writings, some of the different things, some of the greatest stories are about King Hezekiah. And this is a Manasseh who had an opportunity to watch him, to see him, to experience being around a father and a family. He was around some of the greatest prophets of his time. Some of the prophets that we read about, Isaiah and others, Jeremiah, lived during the time of Manasseh. If he needed information or anybody to help him or any type of person to be an example in his life, he was covered with all the opportunities that any single person could have. That's what makes his guilt so much more powerful. That's why God gets so frustrated at Manasseh. Because his guilt is not as easy to wipe away as some people. For some of us in here, we have a godly heritage. We're held at a different standard than everybody else. I know that sounds strange, but I am. And some of you are. We weren't raised without a mom and a dad. We weren't raised without the opportunity to go to church. We weren't raised without the opportunity of being able to decide or not decide. It was the fact of I was drugged for the first 18 years of my life. People talk about being on drugs. I was on drugs. I was drugged to church every morning, every revival, everything that ever happened. I was on drugs. Until God finally delivered me of drugs and I just went on my own. But my whole life has been the decision of those godly people in my life. When I went to church and sat down, I was sitting beside godly old men. I was sitting beside godly old ladies and having to hear their stories day after day. Tim, do this. And when you grow up, do this. And you act like this. And I thought, my goodness, when they died, they would leave me their old hats and different coats and things like this. And that's the reason I wear a lot of the old stuff. I listen to old music because that was the music they introduced me to. They would say, hey, you need to listen to Jackie Wilson. And you need to hear Sam Cooke, and you need to hear some of these old people. And I think, who is that? And I know who Prince is, but I don't know who they are. And they would say, hey, go and listen to them. Buy one of their cassettes. And back in those days, 8-tracks or cassettes or something of that nature. Go buy it and see what in the world I'm talking about. And that became my music. Even now when I'm older, I listen to those songs and I can sing along with them. And that's part of my life. I don't have an excuse. My guilt is 10 times more than yours. If you walked out of here today and went by somewhere and got a 6-pack and went home, God might could look at you and say, hey, you know, your mom did it in front of you every day. Your dad did it in front of you every day. I mean, you're going to have some bad days. If I go by and buy a 6-pack, I've got no reference. I have to do it just simply because I'm just going to stick my nose up at God and say, God, even though I saw it good, even though I lived in it good, I refuse to do it good. That's what the Bible means. Too much given, much is expected. When Manasseh is sitting there every day of his life, he has no excuse for the guilt that he feels. He has a godly heritage, godly family. The priests of his time are some of the most godly men. And when he takes the throne, notice now, he's blessed. He is surrounded by a kingdom that has been established, that is on good ground. All he has to do is be faithful. All he has to do is be faithful to God. Sometimes blessings are good for people and sometimes blessings are not. For Manasseh, it was not good. He couldn't look at God and say, well, God, I was under such stress and under such pressure that I just crumbled. He had no excuse in his life. His life was a blessed life. But don't you notice the extent of his guilt? Manasseh began first by building altars all over the place. Even in his young teenage years, as he was on the throne, he began to build prophet of Baal altars all over the kingdom. You would think that's enough, that he's just going to open up worship. You hear people say that. We're just going to accept all types of worship. You know, if you're Muslim, if you're Buddhist, if you're this, as long as you're trying to get to God, it doesn't matter how you get there. And that became Manasseh's mentality. Look, why can't we just all get along? Let's be at peace. And there's nothing wrong with having Baal over here and having Jehovah over here and having a little bit of this over here and that over there. But it doesn't end at that level. You see, Manasseh, at the moment he began this, had to take another step. In his life. And I want you to show the depth that he did. He began then to open up the temple itself. Can I tell you what the world wants? It's not that they just want you to come to church and worship. And they will never be happy until they can put their fingerprint on the inside of what God calls His. The moment you say, let's just get along, let's just, look, you can do this, but let us celebrate Christmas. No. Look, we don't mind what kind of prayers we do in school. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of prayers. If we just have a moment of silence, if somebody wants to pray to Buddha or pray to this or pray to that, no. Not until we can tell you who to pray and whose name you can use and whose name you can't use. Understand the way the world works. It's not enough. It never will be. Young person, when you think, well, I'm just gonna have friends and they'll accept me the way I am and I'll accept them the way they are. I know I'm straight, but yeah, I know they, you know, they've got an alternative lifestyle and all this, but they're my friends and they'll understand. No. They won't be happy until you're mixed up in their lifestyle. They won't be happy until you do the line with them. They won't be happy until you're drunk with them. They won't be happy until you're sleeping like they're sleeping around. There won't be any connection. My mom used to get so tickled at me all the time because some of my best friends were alcoholics and all types of messed up people. And somebody would ask me, how in the world can you? I said, here's the one thing. They understand and I understand that we don't mix. We can go watch a movie together. We can go to school together. But there's certain nights they won't call me. They better not call me because I'll probably go there and mess it up for them. There's certain nights they know Tim ain't going to be here. There's no sense in inviting Tim. I'd hear about it on Monday, some of the stuff that they did, and I'd just shake my head and I'd say, guys, I know a lot. Until you understand, they won't be happy until you're like them. Manasseh thought if we just have a few kind of alternate lifestyle, it'd be okay. But eventually, they had to eventually build temple worship inside the temple. And you had all types of worship going on, not outside, but inside the temple. Inside the very corridors of where God called it His house and His home. Where God said, I am Lord and King and I am God. He built altars right on the inside. He even went further than this. Finally, He decided that I'm going to build a monument unto Asher. Now, Asher represents the fertility god. It's not enough that God is part of it, but now I've got to turn to alternative things. It's God plus this. It's God with a little help from this. It's God with a little help from that. I'm sorry, I'm not a medicine person. And if you are, God will help you. But I'm not. I don't hardly even take headache medicine. Because here's why. I can't put something inside His temple that is contrary to Him and try to worship them both at the same time. Now, don't get me wrong. My wife has to take, she doesn't have a thyroid. She has to take thyroid medicine. She will the day she dies. Now, I'm not talking about medicine that is here to balance some problem you have or doing this. But I'm talking about where you don't get high enough or low enough or where you just don't feel good or you're not skinny enough or you're not chubby enough or you're not this enough, you're not bad enough. And you got medicine cabinets full that keep you going up and down and around and keeps you balanced and helps you sleep. I want to tell you something. If you have sleeping problems, you just need to open your Bible. If God's going to let you go days without sleeping, then make it something useful. Just don't sleep and just keep reading His Word. Finally, the devil will let go of you. He'll say, look, I'd rather you just sleep than have to deal with you reading the Bible all the time. I'll just put you to sleep. I'll help you sleep. I don't want to keep you up no longer. I believe that in our lives as godly, if we're going to serve God, then you cannot bring alternative worship into the place you call God's domain. That's what's hurt the church. The world looks at the church and says, look, you drink like I do. You act like I do. You go the same places I do. You do all the same stuff I do. The only difference is I don't get dressed up on Sunday and sit in a miserable place for 2 hours. There's no difference between us. Your God is the same in there as mine. You got just as much stuff in your purse as I got in mine. You got just as much stuff hid at the house or in the car. You were sleeping around last night just like I was. The only difference is you got up this morning and decided to go to church. Somewhere along the line, Manasseh thought that, you know what, if we just keep it on the outside, it'll be okay. But sooner or later, it'll cause worship on the inside to be affected. It will cause God's house to be affected. It will cause God's people to be affected. And Manasseh even got to the point he built an idol unto Asher, which literally was just a dead tree. Imagine this, they bought a dead tree and cut the limbs off of it and put it right in the temple. God represents life. God represents everything that's living. And they bought a dead tree and stuck it right in the middle of the temple and said, that's fertility. It didn't end there. If you read about Manasseh even worshiping Asher, he took one of his own children, his own sons, and burned him. Burned him to death in front of everybody as worship unto the fertility god. You ever see people that worship fun and worship their entertainment, but then they leave the dead bodies behind? They worship, it's my life, I do what I want, but they've got the broken homes and three marriages and all the messed up kids in the wake. There's no death. Oh, there's death everywhere. You're worshiping death. You leave death behind. You can smell the death. So when Manasseh is going through his season, there's no excuse for Manasseh. Manasseh never saw his dad do that. Manasseh never saw anybody that in his family do this. This is something Manasseh has pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. Even to the point where the Bible says he shed much blood throughout Jerusalem. Remember I told you that there were good men, priests? Can I tell you that during that time there were people that rose up and said, stop. Quit. Stop now. Manasseh, don't do that. Don't go no further. Have you ever had people in your life that just get on your nerves because they just keep telling you, don't do that? You ever have people get on your nerves and just bother you because they keep telling you, don't act like that? You ever have people that just annoy you because they tell you, don't go down that road? Manasseh had those people. Now, we don't kill them literally. But in our day and time, we just shut them off. I'm not listening to you. I don't want to hear what you got to say. I'm almost 18 years old. I don't have to obey you no more. I can do what I want to. I'm a grown-up now. You can't tell me what to do. Well, we don't kill them literally, but we kill the influence and we murder them just the same. Manasseh literally took the priests and took people, anybody that spoke against him or anybody that said anything about him. History records that it's probably even Isaiah himself who Manasseh killed. And Isaiah would have been killed like this. Historians said that they set him upon a stone, took a wood saw, and sawed him in half while he was still prophesying. I'm going to tell you, that's a lot of blood. Think of how much blood in your life, on your hands. People you've hurt, people you've injured, people you got drunk with, that now you're sitting in church, but they're still there. People that you laughed with and did things with, and now their lives are destroyed. But somewhere along the way, God got your attention. Can I tell you, Manasseh's no different? When Manasseh had bottomed out and had done as much as he could do, when God had got his stomach full and said, I just can't take no more of this. He allowed two Amorite kings to rise up. I love this. Because one of them's name literally means Asher gives many sons. I ain't even got an hour to preach that. It literally means that the thing you loved and the thing you worshipped and the thing you sought after is the thing that got you. The same people you were running with are the same people that's going to kill you. The same people that laugh with you while you're standing are the same people that will laugh at you while you're laying in a pool of blood. Talk about how crazy you was. Manasseh was drugged into captivity, taken in bondage, held in bondage. It's kind of ironic. Because you know why we walk away from God? Because we know two things. Two things causes us to walk away. The first is this. We think there's more freedom out there than there is with Him. That's the first thing that always gets us. If when I'm out there, I can do what I want to do. I can go where I want to go. Nobody can tell me what to do when I'm out there. If you ever meet somebody who's been out there for a while, you'll find out that most of them can't say no to a 4-inch piece of grass. Most of them are dominated by a little old bag, little old bitty bag that just simply jangled in front of their face and make them rob their own mamas. Before they lie to you and tell you about all that freedom that they have. When they don't have food in their cabinet because they got 3 12 packs sitting there that took all that money, because without that they'd go out of their mind this weekend. Before they tell you about all their freedom and all they got, follow them long enough to realize that they are the most embondaged people you will ever meet in your life. From the thoughts that haunt them. I used to work with a guy that literally I knew every night he was going home. Because of the choices and the life he had made, I talked to him, I was blue in the face about, look, give it to God, give it to God. His strategy was simple. I'm going to go get a fifth, and before I get through the night, I'll be able to go to sleep. That was his strategy to get through life. I'd see him stagger in every morning, sober, and the thoughts coming right back again. You know how many people live that way every single day of their life? And the world tells them, look how free you are. Look at all the freedom you got. The second thing is always this. It'll always tell you that you know better. That you know better. You're smarter. See, Manasseh thought, look, my dad was always in that bondage of religion. He didn't have no real freedom. Look at all the real freedom I got. He looked at his dad and said, my dad was so dumb, worshiping God all the time and giving sacrifices and couldn't do certain things and living by certain rules and doing all his stuff. I am so much smarter than my dad. Until that day, in a prison, in an Amorite prison, he sat there and it hit him. I'm not as smart as I thought I was. I'm not as free as I thought I was. For some of you in this room today, that's what it comes down to. You're at a point in your life right now where you have to ask yourself, am I really free? Am I really that smart? Am I? Can I leave here today and do what I want to do, or do I leave here today and I do what I'm bound to do? If you live long enough, I found out my testimony is not as weak as I thought it was. From the age of 8 years old, I have lived free. From the age of 8 years old, I don't have nothing to look back on as bondage. Oh, there's been things that's crept in my life, and I've shared them with y'all. But I've lived so much of my life free that even when things came up in my life, it was disgusting to me to stay in bondage. I knew I'd either die or come out of it. I couldn't stay there. Once you know what freedom is like, you don't want to live any other way. That's what John Wesley and others, when they came up with eternal security and all of those type of doctrines and all, do you understand what their mindset was? They said, if you really got saved, if you really came out, you wouldn't want to go back. Our problem is what we want is just the guilt to go away. We just want to come to an altar and say, look, can you just forgive me? I'm a messed up person. Can you just overlook my messed upness and forgive me? And God says, I don't want to just forgive you. I want to set you free. For he whom the Son has set free is free indeed. I don't want you to go back into bondage. I don't want you to go back into a world that's going to tie you right back down. When I get a hold of you, I want to be able to release you from all the chains and the bonds that have you. That's what Jesus' first message was. I've come to give sight to the blind. I've come to release those that are in prison. All the captivity I've come to set free. And he smiled and he looked at him and he said, today are these words fulfilled in your ears. When Jesus walked on the scene, all of a sudden for the first time, there was no bondage in this earth that was stronger than the God who walked on it. There is nothing that you can put in you or anything of chemicals or anything that's ever going to touch you or any thought in your mind that's stronger than the God that wants to, more than anything else, to set you free. But there's too many Manassehs. See, my message would be great right now if I just gave an altar call. If I gave an altar call right now, some of you would come. And you'd say, I need God to forgive me. But then there's some of you sitting there that wouldn't come. Because you're kind of like Ozzy. And you're kind of like Gene. You got a little Elvis in you. You got a little Whitney in you. You got a little Manasseh in you. See, your problem is this, is that it's really, I mean, I got time to do that. And maybe later I'll do that. I mean, what's it going to hurt if I go another week or if I go another month? What, I'm just not ready right now to do that. I still got a lot of living to do. Manasseh fell on his face in that prison. He asked God to forgive him. He repented. Do you know God is so merciful that God freed him, put him back on the throne of Judah? For the rest of Manasseh's life, he lived a godly life. He was a godly man. He tried desperately. He went back and tore down all the Baal prophets. He went back and cleaned up the temple. He went back and did all the stuff. He tried to rework and refix everything that he had messed up. Only one problem. See, what you don't realize that the devil does is that every day that you delay, there's a certain number. There's a certain person. There's an influence. There's an old story told to me years ago that made it really clear. This young girl went to a revival and got saved. Just a young girl, and she was all excited. The pastor was going to baptize her, and he said, well, let's go talk to your mother and let's make sure everything is okay. And she was all excited. They got to the mother's house, knocked on the door. The pastor explained everything to her. The woman smiled and was cordial, and she said, I'm afraid we can't do that. I said, why? Well, you see, my daughter is not quite of age yet, and we always wanted to have, you know, her dance, what we call like sweet 16 parties, but to have her dance and invite all the beaux from around, and they would have a time and a party, and before we get really into the religion and all of that kind of stuff and her doing that, we want to make sure that we do all those things. 2 years later, a letter came. The letter was very simple. The mother was asking that the pastor would come and preach the young girl's funeral. It's a true story. I'm not trying to flatter it. I'm not trying to make it up. When the pastor arrived, he rode in the vehicle. At that time it was a wagon with the mother, a little carriage. Not much was said all the way to the gravesite. They got to the gravesite, everything was laid out, the casket was already in. The mother just started crying. She told everybody, y'all just go away. I want to talk to the pastor alone. When they went away, they opened the cash. She said, I want you to see. The girl had not died in a car wreck. She had not died in anything. When they opened the top of the casket up, there she lay. Beautiful young girl. But laying there on her chest was a little baby that had died with her. Trying to give birth. She'd got to live that last part of life that mom was wanting her to live so badly. It took her life. The mother bawling, crying. The ironic part was that the pastor led her mother right there to Christ. letter to God. She had another daughter, and she looked at her and she said, "Today, God has saved me and given me everything." And her daughter looked at her and said, "No, not everything." She said, "If you would have given your life 3 years ago, we would have Carrie too." Listen to me. Yeah, you may get saved 3 years from now, and you may give your life to God a month from now or 2 years from now when you finally get good and ready. But don't think that everything's coming back home with you then. There'll be friends of yours that'll die between now and then, that'll never get to hear your testimony. There'll be family members that'll see you in your stupor the next few years, that no matter what you do after that, they'll never listen to anything you say. There'll be damage that you'll sow, that no matter how much you pray, no matter how good you act, oh, you'll get to go, you'll make it. Manasseh died and was buried with his fathers. He died a religious man, a good man. But all those prophets he had killed, all the babies he had killed, a whole generation of Israel he had turned away from God. He turned to other gods. "I'm sorry, could not fix it." I always think of this story, and I know we tell it so wonderfully, the prodigal son. And we like that story because the prodigal took his money and went and sowed and lived righteously and did all those things. And when he ran out of money and finally come to himself, he went home. Got a ring on his finger, a robe. Did you ever notice there's something missing from that story? The Bible says that when he got his money, he went and with other people had lived riotously. With other people, he had sown his wild oats. Now I know he came out of the corn cob patch and went home. But it never says he stopped by the city and picked up any of the people with him. Never said he looked over at the other pen and said, "Hey man, you want to go home with me?" I wonder how many of people died partying with him. There's too many Manassehs in the world today. There's too many of us that sit here week after week, and you know what? We'll probably make it to heaven. We probably will. We pretty much got it figured. When we've had enough, we're going to give our life to God and get in church and get serious. There's only one problem with that. Go with me to Jeremiah, that 15th chapter, and go with me to the 6th verse. And I'll show you the scripture that haunts me, that bothers me. "Thou hast forsaken me, saith the Lord. Thou art gone backward. Therefore will I stretch out my hand against thee and destroy thee. I am weary of repenting." I know you hear a lot of scriptures about God. That's probably not one you've heard a lot. Probably not one a loving pastor would share with you. When you just want to hear, "God's mercies are new every morning. They're unfailing." Well, don't miss too many scriptures in the Bible. You might miss a little bit about God you may not know. God reaches a point in His life in watching us just push our lives to the envelope. And I don't know when it is, Sam. I've seen kids mess up one time and get killed the first time they do something. Think, God, there's kids out there that do it every weekend and you couldn't kill them with a... They've got pins holding them together. I don't know when that time is. I just know in your life and in my life, when we're mushing along and we're thinking, I'll do it next week and I'll get it next month and I'll get my life fixed and I'll help lead my friends to God and I'm going to take it serious later, we don't know when God looks down and finally says, I'm so tired repenting over you. I am so tired of watching you. How many times do I have to send somebody? How many sermons do I have to preach to you? How many tears do you have to see fall before you realize there's things that can't be fixed? Those tears, they'll grow up with the good. You can't just remove them just because you say, I'm sorry. Today is the day of salvation. Today is the day when I say, I don't want to be any further, any more in my life. If you say, Brother Lott, I've probably gone too far. I doubt you've burnt your kids. I doubt you brought some idol and set it in the middle of the church. I doubt you went around all over forests and built altars to other gods. You haven't gone too far. But I will tell you this. God sent me by to tell you, you have gone far enough. You don't have to go any further. Today's a day to decide, God, I want to sow good from this moment on in my life. I don't want a wake of stuff behind me. Can I tell you that even Manasseh's son later, within 2 years of being on the throne, they already killed him. It took his grandson at the age of 8 years old when he wasn't even really knowledgeable to change the course of that country. Can I tell you that today, if you want to change the course of your family, of your life, of your future, don't wait till you're a grandma or grandpa. Don't wait until you're 16 or 18 or you're old enough. My journey with God began when I was 8 years old. I'm where I'm at today by the grace of God. Let it begin today. Don't make it tomorrow. Tomorrows don't turn out as good as you think they do. Tomorrow may not end the way you got it planned. And you may do so much damage that tomorrow can't fix it. Today is your day. If you're in this place right now, as music begins, I'm not trying to flatter you or coerce you into...